All right, welcome to lecture 78 in this American History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. We are going to have our last lecture of material on the Industrial Revolution today. This content will carry us through to that point where this modern world of the last century or so has arrived in technological terms. And with the consequence being, as we briefly discussed yesterday, that the world became much more interconnected than ever. It became interconnected in part through transportation, the revolution of transportation technology, which made it possible to move people and goods from one continent to another on a scale never before possible. And that's absolutely crucial to all of the values that we enjoy today. It's impossible to sustain a modern economy without a transportation infrastructure. The food that gets to your grocery store gets there in refrigerated trucks, which were unloaded off of trains, which were unloaded off of boats, and that are crisscrossing the oceans and the states and so on, in a network of transportation. So the values, these cardinal values that we've talked about, don't come to us without certain other things in place, certain prerequisites. And today we're going to talk about another one that is crucial to modern industrialized life. And that is the communication revolution. And we here at History at Our House live that communication revolution every day, every time that we meet, right? We log in to a server on the computer somewhere in the world. I don't know where it is. And we all manage to connect through this communication hub and through the network that is the internet, and our speakers and microphones and our computers record and transmit and receive and transmit the sound of my voice and yours and the images that we want to share and so on to each other. So it's, you know, the history at our house does not exist without the communication revolution. So evidently it's very dear to my heart. But before we get into this marvel of modern communication, which is the communication revolution and all that it produced and everything that we have around us, I want to make a connection between communication, or I want you to think of the history that we have seen already in terms of communication. So the best way to do that is to bring back our anchor facts and reconnect them through this lens, or view them through this particular lens of the issue of communication. So if you're seeing this and you're thinking about, you know, present-centric connections through history and or past-past integrations, in other words, interconnections between things in the past, can you make a connection using this particular theme of communication? How do these things connect up through communication? Is that something that you can take on? Maybe with that wording by itself, it's too much to ask. I'll ask a specific example to make it more obvious. Use the idea of communication. We discussed the value of communication in connecting. I guess I should use my annotations here. Connect for me these two milestones using the idea of communication. Can you do that? All right. Keen might be able to do it. Okay, Keen.
So my take on this is, well, the only way the ideas of Republican democracy can be, you know, those ideas have to be communicated to the founding fathers, and that was in writing. So that's a form of communication that I can see connecting these two things.
Perfect. Perfect. Exactly. So this is a great concrete example of the nature of communication, the value of communication. And so, in other words, remember how we've been using that expression? There is no United States of America without dot, dot, dot. And we've been, you know, drawing these historical connections and causal connections, which is true, but there is no United States of America without the transmission of knowledge from the ancient world to modern times. And that's what communication is, right? The transmission of information and knowledge. And as Keen rightly points out, the medium here is the written word. At least in pre-industrial time, the primary medium is the written word. So the founding fathers are reading the history of Rome. They're reading the history of Athens, and they are learning from it, and as a result, they are able to produce the greatest country in the history of the world. Talk about the value of communication. The value of the transmission of ideas here, it doesn't get any bigger than that. And of course, everything that we do here in History at Our House is based on that. Because, you know, my point to you ever since the beginning of the year is, history is not the past. History is the story of how we got to where we are now. It's a connection between past and present. And how do we get that connection? How do we know about it at all? Right? How do we know? We've got, here's another good one. How do we draw this line? Let's see, I'm going to use red. How do we, no, well, let me use bright blue. What about this connection? This blue line here. From our buddy Mayonnaise to you and me. How is there a connection at all between us? And there is. Through the written word. I mean, why is this the first historical event? Why do we even know about it? Why isn't it relegated to prehistory like so much else, Juliet?
Because it was written down.
Because it was written down. Because the Egyptians had writing. This is the Narmer palette. This is an inscription that includes hieroglyphics, and there are king lists throughout the ancient dynasties of Egypt that record the reigns of the rulers and their famous deeds and so on, and that tell us to a certain validatable degree that there was such a person who unified Upper and Lower Egypt. And thus, we can, with a pretty good confidence, say that he was there and that this did happen. And all of that relies on the ability of human beings to communicate. Our ability to communicate, of course, is just fantastic, because what we're talking about here is human beings can communicate with each other over thousands of years. It's possible that something that you do or write will be transmitted to someone in the future thousands of years hence, because of the invention of writing. I mean, that really was the first communication revolution, the invention of writing. Because, I mean, the importance of it is impossible to exaggerate, because everything before the invention of writing has been forgotten. It's gone. It disappeared. We don't have history before that. We know there were people around, but we don't have a clue what they were doing, because all we have for them is pottery and a few arrowheads and This Nabba is basically nothing significant that allows us to know who they were and how they lived and so on, because they didn't have writing. So this is communication. And the value of communication, I mean, history. History is communication. Right? And so another really good example of the importance of communication in this particular, in the context of anchor facts, I like the one of Columbus in particular. Does anybody remember in what regard Columbus's entire career was conditioned by a radical advance in communication? In other words, there is no discovery of America without ... Columbus, who taught himself to read and write, what was there to read and write? Why did he want to go to Asia? What was the bestseller of the age? Alexander?
The Travels of Marco Polo.
Exactly. That was the New York Times bestseller of 1300. Exactly. So, and he read it. He marked up that copy. He had ancient texts of Greek geography and so on. He had treaties that were being reprinted also. But the printing press was the next big leap forward. So we got writing, but there's only so much of it. So we don't get a discovery of America in the Dark Ages because there's not enough writing. There's not enough people who can read and write. There's not enough transmission of information and the accumulation of knowledge by human beings in the Dark Age. It's only when we get the Renaissance and we start to see some inventions and some new discoveries and so on, and Christopher Columbus is at the heart of that. So human life revolves around this ability of ours to, I mean, all the progress in history, whether it's the discovery of new continents, the invention of new forms of government and freedom, scientific progress, and so on, all relies on our ability to communicate. Our modern society does not exist without it, which is also true of everything that we talked about yesterday. Remember, we talked about food, clothing, water, shelter, medicine. Right? We've got our cardinal physical values. And yesterday we talked about, well, we don't get any of those without transportation. Our modern way of obtaining those, never mind how much, but just barely even getting it, right? There are no bananas in America unless they're transported here. I mean, some of them are grown in California, I guess, but even so, there are no bananas in Massachusetts, and there never will be, without transportation. And no fruits and vegetables in the winter without transportation. There's no food. And, you know, we talked yesterday about, well, if you want to get to medicine, you've got to get in an ambulance or in an emergency. You need to be transported to the hospital and so on, right? So our modern life that has these enormous values in it requires transportation. So now today I want to ask you not so much a historical question, but again, just kind of an observational one. Around the world today, again, let's see if we can do what we did before. Let's talk about communication in connection to the values that we see around us today. So what are the connections you can make between communication as such, which means internet, telephone, cell phone, television, radio, books, whatever other devices you can imagine, right? What's the connection between those things? And again, food, water, clothing, shelter, medicine. Who's got one that kind of highlights that relationship? Bria, what's your example?
The computer chips are made at Intel in California, and the parts are made in Texas at the microchip place, and it just goes on and on and on. The different pieces that make them
Yeah, but, and probably assembled in China, as Alexander's trying to point out. Okay, but that's transportation, isn't it? How do you connect that to communication? Because those goods have to be transported in order for them to be manufactured and assembled. But what's the connection to communication? Like, to making that possible? That's kind of what I'm asking. So in other words, why would you not have food without communication? Why would you not have shelter without communication? Why would you not have medicine without communication? That's what I'm trying to ask.
Well, it might be that the people that own that railroad have to talk to people who are owning the train that's going through that railroad to get the computer chips to the other place.
Okay, you're on the right track. Okay, now that's still not direct to food and medicine, but you're making a kind of more indirect connection, which is still valid. All of the transportation and all of the industries that are interconnected nowadays, how are they interconnected? How do the microchips go from one plant to another to be assembled with other parts that were manufactured somewhere else and so on and combined together into a single product, which is your iPhone 6? How does that happen? The only way that can happen is through an incredible coordinated effort with all of these companies communicating with each other. That's absolutely true. Okay, but that's just high technology. I want the banana example again. I want the basics. You cannot have the basics in life. Never mind your iPhone 6 without communication. Can't have it. Alexander?
Well, let's take shelter.
Okay.
Where do you find, like, a house to buy or rent? Craigslist.
Okay, or some other website, right? Apartments.com. Okay, right. Okay. What else? And what about, how did it get there in the first place, that house?
That house? Well, somebody commissioned it, and they had to tell somebody else to do it. That's communication, and they have to get all the materials.
Yeah, and they had to transmit the money from their bank account to somebody else's bank account. Right? And somebody, that the banks had to communicate about that. Okay. They had to get permission from the city and install all the utilities and so on and communicate. All right. So there is no shelter there is no shelter construction in the United States without a vast amount of communication. Same thing goes for the banana, right? That you want to eat in the middle of winter, which you would never have access to, and you won't have any vitamin C, and you'll get the flu, and you'll die. So, how do you get the banana and the medicine to get over the flu? Well, again, all of that has to be coordinated and delivered to your door thanks to a vastly complex communication network. And, of course, the simplest, I think, most concrete example of the value of communication is, you get in a car accident on the highway in the middle of nowhere, and you can't go anywhere. How come you're not going to die? Alexander?
Because you hopefully have a cell phone, and you can pull it out of your pocket, and all of these telecommunications towers, they beam a signal through the air, and you call 911, and somewhere a few miles away, some fire truck, like, hears you talking, and then they know to come to that spot.
Exactly. Right? How does that ambulance get to your spot? Right? It's, I've been there. I had a car accident on the highway in the middle of nowhere. And so I was very fortunate. And, I mean, I wasn't going to die, but somebody had to come along and call with their cell phone for the ambulance that took me to the hospital. And so, I mean, that wasn't a life or death particular case. Although, you know what? If nobody had come along, then, yeah, maybe I would have died because I would have gone into shock and who knows. So, yeah, I mean, this is literally life and death in many cases. We're just being able to live at a certain minimum standard. It just doesn't happen without communications technology. All right, so let's talk about how it happened. How did we get from the old way of doing things to the modern? And the way that I want to do this is kind of just highlight for you guys the limitations of pre-industrial technology in terms of communication, which is kind of fun to do. Because because in pre-industrial terms, about the best that human beings could do. I'll tell you why I have this map on my screen in just a second. In pre-industrial societies, our ability to communicate was limited by our ability to transport. So I like to put it, the speed of communication was the speed of transportation. Right? Does that make sense? I mean, nowadays, I don't know how often you guys ever write a letter on paper and mail it. But we're so used to now instantaneous communication. But in pre-industrial times, the movement of information and the transmission of ideas in written form, at least it was all, had to be moved physically. It had to be transported, which is incredibly limiting. And the fastest method of transportation in the United States in pre-industrial times was something called the Pony Express. You guys ever heard of that? If you ever watch some Western movies, sometimes you'll see the Pony Express in those, right? And the Pony Express operated between St. Louis and Sacramento, California. This is why I'm using Google Maps here, which is kind of fun. And the Pony Express took 20 days to that was the fastest you could do it. It took 20 days to deliver mail from St. Louis to Sacramento. 20 days. That was the speed of transportation. That was as fast as information could be transmitted from a person in one location to the next. Right? So nowadays, oops, I didn't want to lose track of this. So nowadays, right, 29 hours. If you're going to get in a car and drive straight and follow the speed limit and tag team while you're driving, because that's an awful lot of driving, 29 hours. Or, why not, $400, we'll get you on a plane and you're there in less than 6 hours. So, but still, in terms of that's just our transportation revolution. Right? 20 days down to 6 hours. Okay, that's the transportation revolution. But nowadays, when we transmit information, and which is what I'm doing right now, and Alexander's over in California, if I remember correctly, so I'm transmitting my voice right now over a distance equivalent to this, and it basically gets there immediately, instantaneously. So this is the revolution. The transmission of information and ideas from the speed of transportation basically to the speed of light, which is as fast as it gets. So how did that happen? How did that happen? Who made it happen? Well, there are three people along the way that are really the three most important contributors to this transformation, to our ability to be speaking with each other today and having a history lesson remotely through the internet. I mean, there are three people that advanced things in the time in American history more than any others. And the first character that I want to bring to your attention was named Samuel Morse. I guess here's a portrait of him. Yeah, good looking guy. So there's Samuel Morse, circa 1840. In 1832, Samuel Morse was an artist, and he was on his way back from Europe. He was a painter. He was on his way back from Europe, and he was chatting with a scientist who was going to America. And he was just having an educated conversation with the scientist. Scientists at the time were very interested in electricity. So Samuel Morse was asking the scientist about electricity, and he said, "How fast is electricity?" And the scientist basically said, "We don't know. It seems instantaneous," which at the time they couldn't measure it. Didn't know. It was so fast, they couldn't even tell how fast electricity is. Eventually, people discovered that, if I'm getting my facts right, it's about 2/3 the speed of light. Not quite as fast, because electricity is transmitted over a medium, and there's a certain resistance, and electrons only move at a certain speed, but it's It's pretty fast. I think it's about 2/3 the speed of light. So, I mean, that's just staggeringly fast. And Samuel Morse just had this flash of inspiration, and he thought, what if we could transmit information using electricity? We've got electricity flowing through a wire, and if it goes instantaneously from one end of the wire to the other, imagine if we could transmit some kind of a signal. Then we would communicate at the speed of light. We communicate instantaneously no matter the distance between us. So I think he's the first person ever to have this premise. To imagine the idea that we could communicate instantaneously regardless of distance. So he's why we're here today at History at Our House, because he created this device that would take an electrical circuit, and no matter how long how great the distance, and would transmit this electrical current over the circuit. But the question was, how do you transmit information through the electricity? And the first method of doing that was developed by Samuel Morse, was to take the current, this close the circuit, basically, from one end to the other, and turn it off and on. And he developed this particular device here that would allow an operator who was very skilled, right, to send these clicks, turn the circuit on and off, on and off, on and off, quickly, and use the code, of course, that eventually was named after him, called Morse code, the clicks and the dashes, as Bria is saying. So, before you know it, you've got this Western Union Telegraph Company that's got transcontinental communication virtually instantaneously, which is pretty amazing. And nowadays, you know, Western Union was the company Samuel Morse founded, and it still exists today. And it's more famous nowadays for one amazing thing that you can do now with instantaneous communication. Does anybody know what Western Union does? Which is another one of the amazing things that we do instantaneously now, Keen.
It's money transfers.
Right? Money transfers, yeah. So you can basically, your parents pay for History at Our House using PayPal. So that's electronic money transfer. It goes from their account to my account at the speed of light. And so yeah, this is absolutely staggering, because the movement of goods and the trading of goods in a modern economy requires the ability to transmit money somehow. And so if your bank and my bank are connected by instantaneous communication, then all they need to do is change a ledger entry electronically nowadays, and money goes from yours to mine, and that's it. It moved without moving. It's practically teleportation, because the money goes from one place to another. It doesn't have to move, just the records change. So yeah, that's what Western Union does, and that's what PayPal does, and yeah, I mean, that's what the banks do now, basically. All your credit card transactions and debit card transactions are just basically the movement of money at the speed of light, which is absolutely fantastical. And so this is, you know, over time, what had to come after this, of course, was we can't do everything by clicks and dashes, right? So the next character who's making the most crucial contribution to the communication revolution is Alexander Graham Bell. So Samuel Morse is inventing the telegraph around 1832. And Alexander Graham Bell is inventing the telephone around 1876. For those of you who want some of the dates, those are kind of the crucial dates. And, you know, his contribution is understanding how to take sound vibrations, which is what our vocal cords make and which our ears record and which somehow transmit to our brain. And right, and we take, okay, how do you take sound and turn it into a signal that can move instantaneously, which is something electrical? So that was his contribution. And I'm no expert in physics, so I'm not going to attempt to tell you in one sentence how that works. if you want to become a communications engineer, at some point you will have to learn how it works. So anyway, thank you, Alexander Graham Bell. So we get the foundation of the Bell Telephone Company and all of those likewise nowadays. And we get telephones proliferating, allowing people to communicate without having to learn Morse code, basically. Thank goodness. Imagine history at our house using Morse code. That would be a little bit difficult. So, AT&T came a lot later. I don't know the whole details. American Telephone and Telegraph Company. Yeah, it might have been him, or it might have been a competitor. I can't remember the details of the story. So anyway, now we have sound vibrations. We've got the voices of human beings and music and so on transmittable over wires. But we haven't got the end of this communication revolution yet, right? Because nowadays we are accustomed to not having to use wires, right? I mean, the greatest advance is not having to rely on a cable, because a cable or a wire can snap, and we don't want to have to rely on that. So the next great invention is to use electromagnetic waves to communicate wirelessly. Let me go back to our buddy here, Googly Elmo Marconi. In 1901, Googly Elmo Marconi is going to send the first wireless signal across the Atlantic Ocean. This is of great consequence for world history. Because before this ability, this modern ability of telegraphy and telephony, before we can do all of that, well, that information from about what's going on in Europe, well, that's a month away, right? And there's a great deal of isolation between people. There's a huge lag time between things that are happening in one place and the transmission of an awareness of that to anybody else in the world. So it makes America's isolation from all of the political mess in Europe a lot more practical, a lot more easy to maintain. But once we start to get into a world where whatever is happening anywhere in the world is virtually instantly known everywhere else, now you have a lot more, you have a new challenge in terms of, if you want to maintain your political separation from the rest of the world, it's harder to do because you're so much more connected to it on every other level. You know about it. It becomes kind of imminent. It becomes instantaneously a part of your world as well. So Guglielmo Marconi is responsible for that. The first transatlantic signal, this is kind of cool. You know, you need antennas. Your cell phone has a small antenna built into it. But here's Guglielmo Marconi watching his helpers erect the first antenna in Newfoundland, in Canada, where it had to be attached to a kite. And it was a huge wire attached to a kite. And meanwhile, there's somebody over on the other side of the Atlantic typing some Morse code and causing an electromagnetic signal using another antenna to be transmitted across the entire Atlantic Ocean. So before you know it, we're connected that way. And of course, nowadays we take that for granted. Right? Nowadays we take that for granted. If something happens anywhere in the world, I just go over here and I type in BBC World News, and bada bing. Oh, look, the people in England are worried about what's going on in South Carolina. Right? BBC World News. So, there you go. This is the world that we live in now. The world of interconnection. On a global scale, communication, everything is interconnected. So next week, briefly look at how does this alter America's history? Because it does in a really important way. And it's going to propel us into the 20th century. 20th century is going to be a different kind of place because everybody becomes interconnected through the communication revolution. All right. So anyway, that's all we're going to do for today. And tomorrow, of course, is history through art. And we'll pick up the story on Monday. So thank you very much, folks. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.